Okay. So I think we can start this evening's talk. I intend to talk about perception this evening, which perhaps has never been talked about here before, I think. I'm not sure, at least not maybe in detail. And the thing which sort of started me off to think about talking about perception is actually always comes from the suttas, always a discourse of the Buddha that is most of my inspiration in my monastic life. And this particular sutta caught my eye a few months ago, a few years ago. And in this sutta, the Buddha or Venerable Sariputta, there's a couple of different discourses. The suttas are the discourses of the Buddha. In this discourse, Venerable Sariputta or the Buddha says that it is actually the question to the Buddha. The question is, who becomes enlightened in this world and who does not become enlightened? Or if you like, who awakens in this world and who does not awaken? And Venerable Sariputta replies that the person who awakens is somebody who is able to understand these perceptions lead to decline. These perceptions leads to standing still. These perception lead to increase or to distinction or to higher states of mind. And lastly, these perceptions lead to knowledge or deep understanding. Penetration, I think, is the word used in this particular sutta. In other words, penetrate to proper understanding of the Dhamma, of the teaching of the Buddha. And reversely, conversely, is that the person who doesn't understand that these particular perceptions lead to decline, standing still, to increase and to penetration, will not attain Nibbana, will not actually become awakened. And that's all it says, the whole sutta. It says that this is all it takes to actually reach awakening in Buddhism. And of course, it's not just about awakening. This is also about practicing the path and actually improving in good qualities on the path. If you want to actually practice the path properly and you want to move towards this awakening, it's exactly the same principle that applies again. You have to, again, understand the perceptions that actually move you in the right direction. If you don't understand these things, there can be no progress on the path. And I thought, when I first read this, I thought this was very interesting, because this is not usually how the Buddha explains the path to awakening. Usually the path to awakening is either the Eightfold Path, it might be the Five Spiritual Faculties, it might be the gradual training. There's all these different ways of explaining the path to Buddhism. But never ever, apart from this sutta, apart from a few occasions, does the Buddha say what all it really takes is to perceive, to look upon things, look upon the world and yourself in the right way. And that is actually enough, it's sufficient to take you all the way to awakening, and also to keep you progressing on the spiritual path. It's a very powerful and important saying, I think. And what it means, it doesn't mean so much that we can sort of set aside the Noble Eightfold Path and set aside all these other things and just focus on our perceptions. That's not really what it means. What it means is that perception and the Noble Eightfold Path, they work together. And if you train your perceptions in the right way, if you understand how to look at the world in the right way, you're actually, by doing that, you're supporting your practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. In fact, I think you can go so far as to say that if you do use your perceptions wisely, you are actually practicing the Noble Eightfold Path by perceiving in the right way, by thinking about the world in the right way, by looking at things in the right way. This is actually leads you and points you in the right direction. Very interesting. I never actually, when I read this, I thought this was very profound and very fascinating. And I didn't really understand maybe previously how important it is to cultivate perceptions. And of course, you find that once you start reading the suttas, the Buddha very often talks about this idea of cultivating perceptions. Because implied in the idea that you should know which perceptions lead to decline, to increase, and to eventual fine knowledge of the Dhamma, implied in that is that perceptions are changeable. We can choose our perceptions. We can actually decide how we want to look at things. These things are not fixed. These things are not something which, you know, are set in concrete. We can choose ourselves how to perceive the world. And of course, this is a very fundamental and important part of the Buddhist teachings, that things aren't permanent, that they are not set in a certain way, but that they are changeable. And our choice is paramount to actually how we see the world and how we look upon the world. So this is sort of one of the foundation principles of Buddhism. And because of that, we can actually, that's why we can develop perception. We can change. And you may think, as a Buddhist, you may think this is pretty obvious, that it's quite clear that we can change our perceptions. But for most people in the world, this is not obvious at all. And the reason it's not, one way of looking at this, of understanding this, is to think of people sometimes who get very depressed, even to the point where they commit suicide. And now, why is it that somebody commits suicide? Because they're depressed, or because they are sad, or because they're grieving for something? And the reason is because they think that that particular perception that they have, they cannot see it changing. They think they are stuck with that. They see no way out. And because they don't see a way out, that's why they think that they can annihilate this, destroy this perception by actually taking their own life. So the general feeling that we have in life is very often that we are stuck with the perceptions that we have, that we are set in a certain way, and that we can't get away from that. That is very the exact opposite of what the Buddha said. We're not stuck with perception. Perception is something we can develop and that we can change. And this is like one of the cornerstones of the teaching of Buddhism. So before I discuss in greater detail the actual how we go about changing our perceptions, some ideas of how to develop these things, I want first of all to define what perception actually means. And this is very important, obviously, to know what we're talking about, first of all. And perception is one of the factors of what we call in Buddhism the five aggregates, or the five khandhas in the Pali language. The five khandhas is like, I don't really like the word aggregate, because the word aggregate to me is a rather strange word. But khanda means like a group, it's a grouping of something. So these are like five groups of phenomena put together. And these five groups put together are how we tend to divide a human being, how to understand a human being. Now, when in Buddhism we talk about understanding a human being, we don't mean a kind of analytical process whereby we divide a human being, a third person, into kind of five separate groups. This is not an analysis, like a medical analysis or a scientific analysis. This is an experiential analysis. So how do we perceive ourselves, and we perceive ourselves, according to Buddhism, into these five categories, these five khandhas. And the main reason why the Buddha talks about these five khandhas is because this is where we have to investigate, this is where we have to look, to be able to grasp, understand ourselves, and also understand the reality that we are immersed in. So this is kind of the ground of investigation, the things that we understand. And when we understand those, that is when we gain insight into the nature of reality. So the five khandhas, these five groupings, are basically, these are a totality of the things of how we experience the world, in particular, how we experience ourselves as persons. That is what the five khandhas are. So these five khandhas, the first one is usually known as form. And form, of course, includes the physical body. The physical body is like a form. And of course, we all know that we tend to take the physical body as belonging to us. This is part of us. And because of that, this is a thing, the most basic thing that we need to investigate is actually the physical body. Because this is the simplest thing of these five khandhas, the most basic one. Form also includes like external things, such as, you know, things that we see through the eyes, we see forms, things that we hear, that we get through the senses in any which way. All of this is part of the form group. And this is like the first of these five khandhas. The second one is known as a feeling sometimes. Now, feeling is not a very good word for the second khandha, because really what it means is how we experience the world in terms of whether it's pleasant, whether it's painful, or whether it's neither pleasant nor painful, in other words, neutral. It's not really feeling, it's more like a kind of basic sensation of the world, how we actually experience the world. This is the second one. Vedana is called in Pali language. The third one is perception. I will leave that for now. The fourth one is known as Sankara in Pali. Sankara literally means like putting together. It means creating. It means making something. And the maker in Buddhism is always the will, the volition, the doer inside of us, the one that drives us around from here to there. This is the creator in Buddhism. And this is what creates like future lives from a Buddhist point of view. This is what creates our reality pretty much at any particular time, is this doer inside of us that pushes us around and makes us run around doing this and that in life. And the last of these five aggregates is consciousness itself. And by consciousness here just means awareness, the ability to know, to be aware that things are happening around us. That basic ability to know, that is the consciousness, the fifth of these groupings. So here you are. This is supposed to constitute everything, our entirety of experience. And you will have noticed that I talked about three different aspects. I talked about, first of all, physical things, which is like the rupa, the form. And then three different aspects of mind. Feeling, sensation, first one, the will, and then consciousness. And everything that remains, everything apart from that, is perception. That's how we can know the world, how we can differentiate the world. This is what perception is about. So to give you some ideas of what perception is then, it is, as I said, the remainder, what remains in the mind. So for example, if you your ability to distinguish colors, for example, to distinguish red from blue, green from yellow, your ability to see any kind of perception that comes through your eyes is a sannya, it is perception. You can distinguish, you can understand the world in terms of these perceptions. Same thing with the ear. When you hear something, your ability to distinguish, to understand what is going on, what is happening in your life, is perception. You can hear one sound from another one. You can understand the distinction between these things. Again, this is perception. And the same thing with the other senses, with the sense of smell, the sense of taste, sense of touch. Your ability to distinguish and understand what is happening is this aspect of perception that discriminates and distinguishes things. There's some interesting medical procedures that have been done quite recently. And I can't remember, I read about this a few years ago. And this was somebody who was born blind. And they had some kind of defect, very basic defect with their sight. And when they reached mature age, they were 20, maybe 30 years old, they went to the doctor, and the doctor told them that actually we have found a way of curing the problem that you were born with. We can actually restore your sight. And what happened is that they restored this person's sight. And once they started to see, they couldn't really see anything. All they saw was this blur of colors, this blur of shapes, this blur of light and darkness, and they couldn't really distinguish anything in the world. And the reason for that was because their ability to perceive had not been developed through those first 20 or 30 years of life. They basically they could see, but they were still blind in a certain way because they couldn't actually distinguish things. And that is the difference between like the mature perception that we have, ordinary people have, the ability to distinguish, and somebody who hasn't actually developed that function very much at all. So that is, this is how we perceive. This is the very basic sense perception, how we can actually distinguish things that come through our senses. But perception is also about concepts. All the concepts that we have in our minds are essentially perceptions. And for example, how do we relate to ourselves? Who do you take yourself to be? What kind of person are you? And of course, very often we think of ourselves as maybe male or female. We think ourselves as having a certain education. We think ourselves maybe as a cultured person. We think ourselves as a spiritual person. We think ourselves as wealthy or perhaps average or poor even. And all of these things define us. And these things are just perceptions. These are creations of the mind. Perhaps more importantly, we think ourselves as, in terms of psychology, as a caring person, as a kind person, perhaps as an irritable person, as a peaceful person. And all of these things are perceptions in our minds. And one of the things that you will notice when you think about this is that these perceptions are changeable. The person that we are changes all the time. It is not something that stands still, not something which is stuck. It changes. The person you feel that you are today is probably quite different from the person that you felt you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or even yesterday. And because that person you are is changeable, it doesn't have to be random change. This change can be guided. And this is what Buddhism is all about. It's about guiding the change of perception of who you are. So it actually creates greater sense of peace, happiness, compassion, and goodness in your life. And this is really the whole of the path. It's this guiding of the change. And this is the guiding of the change of the perception of who you are. And then, of course, there is the perceptions of who we are in relation to other people. Who are our friends, for example? Who do you consider your friends? Who do you consider your enemies? Now, this is just a perception. There's no real reality to that, because friends come and friends go. Enemies come, enemies go. Neutral people come and go. There's no solidity behind those things. And again, you can see how these things, because they are changing, always evolving, they're also something that we can actually develop deliberately. And very interestingly, one place the Buddha said that perception is like a mirage. It's a mirage because it doesn't have any solidity. It is always changing. It is always mutating into something else. And because that, it has this ability, this sense of being a mirage, something which changes before, and there's nothing there behind the change, behind the surface appearance. And that's why, again, we can use it to develop our minds, to develop perceptions, because of that lack of solidness in these things. And once you start to look at your mind in this way, in terms of perception, you realize that so much of what we have in our minds actually is just these types of perceptions. What about your memories? What are your memories apart from just being perceptions of the past? It's a certain way of looking at the past. Now, that way of looking at the past, again, is not solid. It changes all the time. We think of things in a different way at a later stage. Again, it is just perception. Or you think about the future. The future, again, is just a particular way of looking. The way you look at the perception of the future is just a particular way of looking at the future. There's no solidity there. There isn't any real future in the mind. It's just how we relate to this idea of the future. And the same is also true of the present. Even the present, right here and now, whatever you perceive here and now is basically a choice. It is something that we can change and something we can develop. You may feel that sitting in this room right here and now is a very solid and very clear experience, but it can be experienced very differently. Part of that experience that you have when you're sitting in this room right here is a sense of me. I am here. I'm sitting in this group of people. And that sense of me has a certain solidity to it. But of course, that sense of me that you have right here and now is itself just another illusion from a Buddhist point of view. It is possible to perceive this room in terms of just you are here, but without having the sense of me as compared to everybody else in this room. And this is the idea of non-self, whereby you no longer have that sense of solid identity that you otherwise would have. So even this present moment can be seen very differently from the way it actually is right here and right now. So because of this, this is what perception is. And you can see here that this perception is basically our entire worldview is built up of perceptions, how we look at things. And because of that, it becomes very useful, a very useful ground for spiritual development. Now, some of these perceptions are much more important from a Buddhist point of view. And one such perception is the perception of impermanence. This is a very important one. Now we're moving into the area of Buddhist perceptions. Now, the perception of impermanence is always with us to some extent. We can see how the world is always changing. We can see how we are changing. But sometimes we need to remind ourselves of this perception of impermanence. We need to actually reflect on it. We need to contemplate it. And only when we contemplate this kind of perception does it actually lead to spiritual growth for ourselves. This is actually very important, and it is very important because despite the obvious fact that things are impermanent, we tend not to see this, we tend to forget it. So how do we contemplate impermanence? This is a very foundational contemplation in Buddhist teachings, contemplation of impermanence. When you read the suttas, you see it in place after place. You see the Buddha says you should contemplate impermanence because it leads to spiritual growth. And of course, a very obvious way of talking about impermanence is to remember that everything that you have in this world that is dear and pleasing to you, things like your personal possessions, for example, are impermanent. One day you're going to have to lose these things. One day they will go. And sometimes they go when you least expect it. And certainly when you die, these things will have to disappear from you. So that is one very basic and very, very simple way of reminding yourself of impermanence, that your possessions, all you have in this life, will change, will become otherwise. Another way of looking at it is to think about your relationships, your friends and even your family. All of these things, again, are impermanent. They will change. They will become otherwise. Your physical body is eventually going to die, is eventually going to disappear. Again, it is not something you can hold on to. It is impermanent. It will change. And this is a foundational perception in Buddhism. It is a very powerful perception. It means, if you understand how it works, it actually means that you start to let go of things in the world. You let go because you understand you cannot hold on to these things. These things actually are impermanent. It's not up to you whether these things are going to stay or not. They will eventually have to disappear. And the more you understand that, the deeper it sinks into your consciousness, the more you will tend to let go of things outside of you, including also your own body. And of course, people often ask, well, how do we let go in meditation practice? I want to let go. I want to be able to enter some deep states of samadhi. I want to have peace and bliss and all these kind of things. And this is how you let go. You let go by understanding the reality of things. And the deeper you understand the reality, the more you can let go of the world outside. But like all things, it's not just a matter of doing things once and trying to sort of hit the trigger of impermanence and then having let go forever after. This is a development. All of these things have to be developed. And so it is with the perception of impermanence. You have to develop it. You have to reflect on it again and again and again until it becomes like a spiritual power inside of you. Something you can turn on. Turn on particularly when you meditate. And you will find that when you hit the right trigger and it actually works, it makes you very, very peaceful because it helps you to let go. That's why it is so powerful. And even if you can do just that much, if it can help you to let go of all the physical things in the world, then you're already doing extremely well in your practice as somebody practicing the spiritual life, because this will be very, very beneficial for your meditation practice. Of course, the idea of contemplating impermanence goes much deeper than that. This may sound difficult enough to sort of let go of your body and let go of all the physical things around you. It may sound hard enough, but of course it goes much, much deeper than that, because Buddhism is an extraordinarily profound teaching and profound spiritual practice. And it goes to the point where actually all these mental content that I was talking about before, the feelings, the perceptions, the will, and even the consciousness, even these things are eventually, ultimately seen as impermanent, something that you have to let go of, something you cannot hold on to. But that is a very, very deep practice. And if you can start off with just the physical things of the world, you're already doing extremely, extremely well there. So this is one example of a Buddhist development of perception. And when you read the suttas of the Buddha, you find that there are so many types of perceptions that you can develop, so many things. He talks about it again and again. And another classic example is the breath, for example, breath meditation. Breath meditation is really just the development of perception. You are developing the watching of the breath, and as you watch the breath starts to change, and that changing of the breath is actually itself a development of perception. as you practice the breath meditation. The Buddha talks about some very profound development of perception, like the development of perception of cessation, the ending of things. And of course here we're talking about things such as understanding the nature of nibbana, the ending of the ordinary things of the world. Very, very profound things. So these perceptions are things, the development of perception is something that you take with you from the very beginning of the path all the way to the very end, to actually the attainment of nibbana itself. But I want to talk about more about the basic perceptions, the ones that are really important in life, the ones that are going to make a difference for you in your daily life, the ones that are going to make a difference in your practice of meditation. And one place to look for these basic types of perception that we need to develop is to look at the very beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right intention. And right intention is divided into the intention of renunciation, but more importantly, the intention of non-harming, which is the same as intention of compassion, and the intention of non-ill will, which is the same as the intention of metta, of loving-kindness. So this is the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, intention of loving-kindness and intention of compassion. How can you have the intention of compassion in your life? And the answer is the only way that you can have the intention of compassion. Now, a real intention of compassion has to come from the heart. The only way you can really have an intention of compassion is you must really feel a sense of compassion inside of you. If you try to meditate and you say, oh, may all beings be happy and well, you have to mean it. It has to come from inside of you, from deep inside of you. You really have to mean this. If you don't mean it, it's not going to work. So you have to find a skillful means by which you can mean these things. It has to really come from the heart. So how do we do that? And the way we do this is by changing our perception of the world around us, of the people around us, and also of ourselves. So understanding and developing perception is foundational for being able to do such a thing as metta meditation, to have compassion for the people around you. You can only have that compassion if you first of all develop perceptions. So how do we do this? How do we develop these perceptions? Now, the first thing, if you're going to have compassion and metta for the people around you, is to overcome anger, negativity, and irritation. And I just want to explain briefly just a few strategies on how to do this, how to overcome irritation, anger, negativity in life, because this is very, very important. But again, I want to say that if you're going to do this, you have to stick at it. You have to try it, develop it again and again and again over a long period of time. And only then does it start to bite. This is the unfortunate thing about spiritual practice. It's not a magic pill you can just take and it's all done. You have to actually apply yourself. And you have to apply yourself regularly over time, month after month, year after year. And that is when the results really start to come. So take anger, take irritation with people around us. Now, this is something everybody has to experience. It's impossible to have a life where we never get irritated by anybody. This is the nature of being in existence or having a life, that we sometimes get irritated. So what can we do? Now, the first strategy that I like to do, and remember that this is a strategy in developing our perceptions, in changing our perception of things. Now, the first strategy is to remember that when somebody does something to you which is unpleasant, they say something or they do something or they even think something which is not nice, then anger is not really going to be helpful. Remember that it is not a personal issue when something does something bad towards you. It's never personal. The reason people get angry and upset with other people is because we tend to take things personally. We have a feeling that in a sense that it is this person against us. They are doing something towards us. And that's why we get upset with the other person. But remember that the reason why people do whatever they do is not because they have anything against us as a person. It's because they are just reacting to causes and conditions in their own life. They are a slave, if you like, to their own causes and conditions in their own life. And they act in a certain way because of those causes and conditions. Their behavior is never, ever personal. If this person had been in a similar situation with the same cause and conditioning influencing them, and another person had been there in your place, they would have reacted in exactly the same way. It is never, ever personal. And when you look at it at that way, when you change the perception of what the person does away from being something personal between you and them, and it's just the person reacting to their own causes and conditions, you realize that anger is absolutely, completely, not only unnecessary, but is counterproductive. It has no place in that kind of situation. So try to remember this. Try to remember that it's always impersonal. It's never, ever personal. Even though it might feel that way, it's not personal. The second way of another way of overcoming anger is just to remember that the world is the way the world is. People are the way people are. A lot of the times we get upset and irritated and angry at things. It is towards things that we're not going to be able to change anyway. And it's a bit like Ajahn Brahm's simile in the opening door of your heart, where he talks about the man who gets angry at the red traffic light. Now, it doesn't make any sense to get angry at the red traffic light, because the red traffic light just does its own thing. And whether you get angry or not, it's not going to change that red traffic light. And almost everything in the world is like red traffic lights. Things are just the way they are. And whether we get angry or not is not really going to change the situation. And if you reflect on that deeply, it actually is not so hard to actually let go of the anger and realize that, as a matter of fact, the anger, not only is it going to not change the situation, it's going to make matters worse very often. It's going to make matters worse, and it's also going to lead to our own misery, because we feel miserable when we get angry. It's an unpleasant state of the mind. So it is completely, most of the time, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to get angry and upset at things around us in the world. A third way of looking at anger and irritation, and that is to change the focus of what is happening in the moment. So instead of focusing on the other person doing something, saying something, acting in a bad way, place the focus on yourself instead. How does it feel when this other person does something which is not nice? And what happens then is that you feel a sense of suffering inside of you. It feels painful. They said something to me which is not nice, or they did something which isn't right. And look at the pain inside of yourself. Focus on yourself rather than focusing on the other person. And this has a lot of wonderful consequences when you do that. Because when you focus on that pain in yourself, first of all, you can have a sense of compassion on yourself. You understand this is painful. This is the way the world is. It's not, I can't change this. This is the way things are when I have to interact with other human beings. Pain is there. Pain is necessary. This is part of life. And just focus on that pain. And what you are doing there is contemplating suffering. You're contemplating coming to understand what suffering is about in this world. If you react to the other person instead, if you become angry because of the way they are behaving or what they're saying, you are no longer contemplating suffering. You are reacting in an unskillful way, and you are moving away from the Dhamma. You're moving away from something useful on this path. But when you understand the suffering instead, you are actually creating insight into what this life is all about. It's a very powerful and skillful means to use in these situations. And then you have compassion for yourself, because you realize this is suffering, this is difficult, and this is the way the world is. It's not something that I can possibly escape. And then once you rise to compassion in yourself, then of course that compassion can also be extended to other people, including the perpetrator of the action which you don't like. Because once compassion is there, it tends to go out also to other people. And you understand that this other person, he himself or she, is also under the influence of condition and causes which they are not really in charge of. And because of that, they do these particular kinds of actions. So these are some of the skillful ways of overcoming negativity and anger. And again, if you apply these things regularly, consistently in your daily life, and you try it and you actually do it regularly, you'll find that something starts to happen inside of you. You start to look at the world in a new way. You start to see people in a different way. And gradually, you start to emerge from your previous bad habits, and you get into a new way of looking at the world. And it's very powerful and very beautiful as time goes by. And of course, it has a great effect not only on your general level of happiness in life, but it also has a profound effect on your meditation practice. You find you become more peaceful, you become more happy in your meditation, and your meditation takes off in a way that it has never done before. So that is one side of the coin. If you want to develop the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path of loving kindness, we have to develop the perception which underlies the ability to have loving kindness. Because loving kindness is really the ability to focus on the positive qualities of other people and on the suffering of other people. This is what gives rise to compassion and loving kindness. When we see the suffering, it gives rise to compassion. When we see the good qualities, it gives rise to loving kindness and metta. So once we have sort of undermined the negative states of the mind, then we can start applying the mind instead to perceptions of loving kindness. So what are these perceptions of loving kindness? These perceptions of loving kindness is basically to remind ourselves of the good qualities in the people around us. And you will have noticed before, during the meditation before, I started off by reminding everybody to remember the people around you and to focus on the good qualities in the people around you. And the reason for that is because if you don't have that perception in your mind of the goodness in the people that you want to have loving kindness towards, that perception isn't there. It's impossible to have loving kindness. You have to give rise to the perception of goodness, first of all. And that is why in our meditation practice, it is so important to choose the kind of object, the kind of person, the kind of people who we regard in a positive way to be able to have loving kindness. And this is something we develop through practice. So remind yourself, think, what is it about these people? What is so special about them? They may not be perfect, but they have an intention to be good. They have an intention to be kind. If you meet somebody who keeps the five precepts, what a wonderful thing that is, that somebody is willing to do something in their life to actually create a better world, a better life for themselves, for their family, and even for society outside of that. The Buddha said some very beautiful things about keeping the five precepts. He said that keeping the five precepts is like giving a gift to the world. You give a gift of trust and fearlessness to the people and the animals around you because they know that they can trust you. They know that you won't take advantage of them. And that is a beautiful feeling of fearlessness and trust that you're providing to the world around you. Very powerful way. And if you think about that, this is what people who keep the five precepts do. They give this gift to the world. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that beautiful? And when you start to think of the people around you like that, as beautiful individuals who are trying to do something good for the world, who have good intentions, who want to support themselves and support others, then you can actually, it becomes very easy to actually wish them well. A beautiful person is somebody you want to wish well, is somebody you want to be happy, is somebody you want not to have suffering in their life. So develop that perception. Remind yourself of the good qualities in the people around you. Remind yourself also of the good qualities in yourself. Don't be down on yourself. It's good to be happy with yourself if you keep the five precepts. It's good to be happy with yourself when you do an act of kindness and generosity in the world. It's important, and it will give rise to a sense of metta inside of you when you do it properly. So this is just some basic pointers on how to develop perception in life and how important it is to develop perception. And as I said at the beginning of the talk, if you don't develop perception, if you don't take this as part of your spiritual practice, the path is not going to work. It is part and parcel, it is indispensable part of the path that you develop your own personal perceptions. And in particular, I think one of the most important things is precisely this, to develop the perceptions whereby you overcome the negativities, anger, irritations, all these petty states in life, and instead you develop the beautiful perceptions of kindness, compassion, loving kindness towards the people around you. This is one of the most important things you can do, because this is a foundation stone of the Buddhist path. And then, as you grow, you can also gradually start to remember things like perceptions of impermanence, particularly maybe when you go on meditation retreats, you find that these things might be very powerful. So use this, and if you use this appropriately, you will find that it actually has a very, it empowers your path. It's like giving a bit of rocket fuel to the Noble Eightfold Path to sort of improve your meditation and everything else. Okay, so that is all I want to say about perception. Does anybody have any questions or anything they want to mention before we move on? Yes?
In the context of your talk about compassion and five precepts and so on, what about the nuns and monks who burn themselves to protest?
Okay. I think, again, it depends on, I guess it depends on where you're coming from and why you're doing it. And I think if you do it out of anger, negativity, because you're angry either with the regime or you're angry with yourself or whatever, it's not a very good thing to do. Because anything which is done out of anger is always a, it always has a negative consequence in terms of karma, in terms of the future. And this is one of the great things about Buddhism. You can always, almost anything in life, you can always go back to one basic thing. What is the motivation? Why are you doing it? And from the motivation, you can always decide whether an act is good or bad. So it really, it's impossible to tell. But if they do it with a sense that they want to, maybe they have even a sense of compassion or loving kindness. I don't know if it's possible to immolate yourself out of compassion or kindness. But if it is possible because you want to show some kind of injustice to the world, if you can do it, it is at least conceivable that it might be a good act, it might be a positive act. It is conceivable. But I think it is an area where you have to be very careful, because I think it's very easy to come from the wrong kind of motivation in those kind of things. It's really a matter of motivation and intention when you do these things. So. Yes? Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. And that's something I had intended to talk about, which I didn't mention in the part, in the talk, is that perception and view are very closely related to each other. And you find that in the way the Buddha teaches, he says that your view you have will tend to condition your perception. If you have a certain way of looking at the world, if this is my view, you will see the world in terms of that view. And also vice versa, if you have a certain perception of things, then that will color your view. So these things kind of, they revolve around each other. And this, for that reason, because, and of course you know that view is the foundation stone of the Noble Eightfold Path, that right view comes first. So because of that, it actually, changing your perceptions also tends to change your view. It changes your view over time. Your view gradually comes around as well. So because of that, the changing of perceptions actually reinforces also the very first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path as well. So these things go together.
So the view would be a more complete picture, and the perception is sort of feeding into that view.
Yeah, a view is like a... Um, is, is like a um, It's actually a kind of decision about what the world looks like. It's like, for example, you know, in Buddhism we talk about like eternalist view, for example. It's the idea that things last forever. And this is based on your perception. Because you have a perception of a self, of I exist, I am, because of that you create the view that things are eternal. And then because you have this view that things are eternal, or maybe you think that your consciousness is eternal or your mind is eternal or whatever, because you have that view, you tend to perceive the world in that way. So they go around each other. So perception is more immediate, and view is more, as you say, more a kind of, you sit back and you have a certain idea about how the world actually works. But that doesn't mean that views are just ideas. Views themselves are also very solid and very kind of... are things which are not something you can necessarily see straight away. And a classic example of that is the view of self. Now, people in the world will say that there is no self. There is, you know, you can ask a psychologist, is there anything inside a human being which is a self? And the psychologist will say, no, there is no self inside a human being. And yet, despite the fact that we can have the intellectual idea that there is no self, still, there is a kind of underlying feeling inside of you that there's something solid there. And that underlying feeling is also a kind of view. It's a view which is so deep that you can't even access it intellectually. It's beyond your intellectual abilities. And that is what you actually... It's that kind of view that you are challenging in deep meditation practice. It's a very deep thing. Okay, any other questions or comments? Anybody? Everybody happy? Happy perception?